Welcome to ZPod, Amadeus' professional development podcast, bringing you experts, discussion, and new ideas that impact the way we work today and tomorrow. Okay, good morning, everybody. Our topic today is going to be about the physical space that we work and live in. Not so much how it looks, or the appearance of our living rooms or our shiny cars, but how we actually use those spaces and the impact that this has on our bodies. So we're going to take this further into the complexities and unravel the secrets of this field of ergonomics. And to do this, we have Dr. Naomi Abrams, who is the founder and director of Worksite Health and Safety Consultants here in Maryland in the United States. She is a doctor of occupational therapy, and she's a certified ergonomic assessment specialist who travels the world and helps people deal with their workplace issues. That is, the workplace issues that have to do with their health. And she is the author also of Why Is My Office a Pain in My... ... and we will leave you to find out more about that. So we're delighted to have you here. We know you have a great deal to tell us. And first of all, let's assume that I am ignorant, which in this case I actually am. Tell me what ergonomics is.
Ergonomics is the science of looking at how the tools people use. So in this case, the computer, the desk, the chair, things like that. The task the person is doing. So in the office, it would be your computing or your meetings, things like that. And how the worker in themselves, the person, can physically and cognitively work within that space and the environment they're working in. So an office, or in many cases, some people work out of their coffee shop or their cars or anything like that. So we're looking at how those four concepts go together so that we prevent an injury to the worker.
So there are things you can do, you're saying, to completely prevent or just decrease?
Mainly decrease. Completely prevent would require us changing the way we work completely, which I don't see happening anytime soon. But we can decrease the risk of, and we can, in many cases, take away this concept that if I work at a computer, I'm just going to have pain, which isn't true. If you do, it should be extremely short-lived, and we should be able to correct it.
Well, I think that's good. That gives us all hope. I know that you mentioned when we were talking before we recorded this today that chairs are a big issue.
Chairs are a big issue. It's actually the top question I get asked, and it's really the wrong question when it comes to ergonomics of the office. But the top question I get asked is, what chair should I buy? It's really not about getting the next greatest chair. It's really about how you make each space fit you. In fact, the biggest purchase companies have to make for their employees is actually a footrest, not a chair. You can get away with a lot of things so long as the chair isn't too big, meaning you're sitting in it and you can't actually get your rear end all the way back in that chair. Or the desk is just really huge and you can't get under it for some reason. But in many cases, if you can get yourself into that chair, if you can get yourself back in the chair and let the chair hold you, the real problem people have is actually reaching the desk without their feet floating off the ground.
Yes. I think that's right. I mean, I often want to put my feet up when I'm working. But I also know that I'm also supposed to move around a lot. And we often have swivel chairs. Is that really, is that designed to help people keep moving? Is that the intention?
The intention of swivels in the original way was just so that people could move from desk to desk and have mass utilization of the space. But movement is extremely important. And within the internet world right now, it's becoming very popular to say you need a sit-stand table, or even more crazily, a desk that's on top of a treadmill. We don't really need to go to those extremes. Movement is extremely important, though. And really, we don't have the perfect formula for you. For every 30 minutes, you should do 5 minutes, and that's going to solve all your problems. We don't have that formula. In general, we say if you've been sitting for 30, 45 minutes, get up, move around. It could be 5 seconds, it could be 5 minutes, let your body tell you. It's not necessary to have a standing desk per se, since most people can't actually stand for more than 10 to 15 minutes without doing strange things. I mean, we've all seen them. If they're standing in a market, they start leaning on their cart. Or if they're standing next to a wall, they'll lean on the wall. That's your body saying, I really can't stand for this long. My muscles aren't strong enough. So when you're in the office space, there's so many different things you can do. It's really people that are welded to their desk, like call center employees or people who are not permitted to move. Those are people who need a desk that moves because then they can continue working. But we get on our phone, we go to meetings, we go to talk to our colleague next door, and all of those things can be done standing. I like to tell people, I know that culturally it's very important when someone arrives in your office, you say, hey, please have a seat, join me here. Instead, say, please, let's take a standing break together. If they're a colleague, they'll let you know if they're not capable of standing that long. Obviously, in certain social cultural situations, you can't do that and work very cognizant of it. But this whole, what I call seat-seeking mentality needs to take a break.
That's very interesting. And I suppose it goes the other way for people who are standing up in their work all the time. They have to likewise serve.
Yes, and that's where a lot of our data came from about the problems of standing too much. I mean, if you think about people who do have to stand, those who work in a bank, those who work in a grocery store, those who work selling clothing, they're on their feet all day, nurses, doctors. And we have negative effects from standing too much. And unfortunately, within the public media, that aspect has been lost. People go, oh, sitting is bad, therefore I should stand. Well, it really is the same thing. Everything in moderation. Try not to do too much standing, too much sitting. Think about just getting movement changes.
So I guess there is a sense that something can actually be fixed, but what kind of things are we trying to fix? Is the consequence of not paying attention to this serious?
It can be extremely serious, and it can just be very nagging. Really, we're talking about two different types of injuries here. Within the world of ergonomics, we call them work-related musculoskeletal disorders, which is a big word that just means disorders that could potentially be related to your work that have to do with your body. And we made up a big word for it. Those fall into two categories. We've got injuries to the nerve, which is a compression injury. Nerves don't like to be squished, period. And then we've got muscles and tendons, which go with your sprains, your strains, your spasms, things that you'd really just like a massage for. Those fall into those categories. So both of those, the nerves and the muscles, tendons, can usually start out as something that's just infrequent, nagging, annoying. And at that point, it's relatively easy to correct. It's where ice, where rest, where figuring out what you did wrong. That's the top thing that people skip. They're like, oh, I'll just put ice on it and then go back and do the same thing again. At that level, where it's just a little bit of a nagging annoyance, then you can change it. When it starts to be a constant pain or a constant numbness or a constant tingling, within the nerve regions, we get the feelings of tingling and numbness or burning. Once that starts to be a constant problem, that's something that medically has to be corrected. It's a nerve that just has reached its limit.
So for managers, I imagine the advice is kind of to brief your employees to pay attention to what's going on before it gets too bad.
Yes, and we have found that many times the acknowledgement that there is already a problem helps your employees tremendously. In our recent research of major global organizations, we actually found that between 60 to 80% of the population is working with some level of discomfort, where very few of those people have actually reported it to their managers, especially in cultures where communication with higher level managers is not considered the norm, especially on personal issues such as pain. it becomes a real hidden issue, and you're losing, you know, in the world of companies, we're thinking about what our income is and what our profit level is, and you're losing a lot of that. But more importantly, the humans that work for you, they're really your major capital. They have the most intelligence. That's where you really thrive, if you have good people. And having good people who are working in pain are not people who are working very efficiently.
It's very true. And 60 to 80% is a high percentage.
It's a very high percentage. And for those companies that have access to their medical records, if they're in a culture or in a city or country where medical system is actually standardized in some way, which in many of the regions they're not, getting your hands on that data, not to say, okay, Joe has this problem, but to say, we have 30 people who have gone to the doctor for this problem. We kind of need to deal with this. Other than that, we can do health risk assessments for people where they can anonymously tell us. That's the key, is people are anonymously telling us they have a problem. Programs that we do for corporations where we go in, we actually do a level of preventative care to say, let's look at people. They may not be complaining to you, the manager, but let's look at how they're working and let's see if we can make them a little bit more comfortable. Whether they've said they're uncomfortable or not, let's see if we can make them, I hate to use the word proper posture because there's many different proper postures, but let's see if we can make them just a little bit better. And interestingly enough, it's during that time that we start realizing what the scope of the problem is. So we call it preventative, knowing full well that when we go in there, we're going to be getting anonymous little reports or, hey, don't tell my manager this, or, oh, this is interesting. I didn't know I was supposed to not feel that while at the computer. So dealing with it in a preventative measure is very often not necessarily preventative, but really the most cost-efficient and effective.
So it kind of opens up as you go in and start having the discussion. And I'm wondering, is that, you know, that process, do you find it makes any difference where these people are coming from, their backgrounds, their age, their gender? Is there a one-size-fits-all?
Absolutely not. A one-size-fits-all for what we'll put under, let's put it under culture. It's probably the easiest umbrella to put it on, where you've come from, whether you're male or female, old, young, high class of a lower class system, socioeconomic system, whether you have a lot of family responsibilities, changes how well you report these things, whether you consider these things worthy of reporting, and how set people are in their ways. And that is very often cultural, as well as personal. So how we address that really depends on where they're coming from. If it needs to be the big boss telling them this is the way things are going to be as a dictate, and that's the culture and that's how it would work best, then that's what we do. If it's your company cares about you, which in the United States works very well, in many other cultures doesn't work at all, then that's, we then become a benefit to people and we approach it differently. So every company is different.
I think that's really interesting. And I know that you've actually had the opportunity to travel worldwide to experience these different cultures and to get a sense of how different parts of the world deal with this, but also if there are unique problems depending on where you're actually working. So that even though the office space might be beginning to look the same worldwide, you're finding some differences. And have you had any opportunity to go to the Middle East? And,
yes.
And did you learn anything of interest there?
Every country has areas of interest. And the Middle East is a very large region with differences within each country, even within each city. A lot of that has to do with, in the Middle East, we found family connections, and family sense of responsibility within the community, that can help us or hurt us. When we work with people who have a strong sense of needing to care for their family, there's this perception that I just keep going regardless. And that can really slow us down because they don't want to take that little bit of time to care for themselves. Self-care changes depending on how dedicated to their own family that they're making a life for their family or working within a community. The flip side is also true. If they have that sense of community, that sense of responsibility, if we can tap into that, then it's helping everyone in that one fell swoop, so to speak. The other big thing that we found is difficulty with access. Right. And this is access to everything from the medical professions to equipment, to having knowledge of who the professionals are within the country. There's no standard globally of what ergonomics or who can practice ergonomics. There's no global standard for that. And so what we found is that people will find something on the internet, they'll train themselves and go out and try to help. And it's all in the spirit of helping, I hope. But there's a lot of incorrect information out there. And if your access is really through the internet, if your access to information is through the internet, you can get really misled very quickly. Now, the one great thing that many of the countries in the Middle East have going for them is that they still have a good connection with craft workers. So people who work with wood, people who work with metal. And the reason why that's so important is that, as I said, many of the tools people need in the office are not high-tech gadgets. They're not chairs that can go in 15 different directions and make you a cup of coffee. They're things like footrests. There are things like high tables, so you can stand up to read, you can stand up to have meetings. And the thing is that woodworkers can do that for you. Footrests do not exist, I find, outside of the United States as a something that is used frequently. And so we have to go find them. And in countries, and there are many countries within the Middle East, where import is not the easiest thing in the world. Being able to rely on a local craftsman, those skills have not been lost, and in some regions they have been lost.
And when you say there's not a lot of people well trained in this, is it a long and difficult process that you had to go through to get to where you are today?
I would say that I have evolved, and people who have done this for a long time have evolved. When you look at the training for how to work within office ergonomics, what quote-unquote proper posture is, it's fairly simple. But the intricacies of how that actually gets applied within each office space is very different. And so while the education itself may seem fairly simple, when you go to apply it, you can do things very wrong. So it's a learning process, and really I recommend a learning process under supervision, because you have to try things. You have to see that it works, see that it doesn't work. See, right. if I make this one change, does that have the effect that I'm looking for? And I think the positive of having someone who has really been in this very deep for a long time is to say, I know that if I poke you in this place, I'm going to get this effect.
So Amadeus works in a nice office, and we all have our computers, of course, and our perfectly nice little offices, and then we have breakout meeting rooms now, so that we I guess part of this to move around and to create new use of space. So but I didn't grow up in an office that was anything like this, and I'm not convinced that the little young people starting off in the world today are going to have a work experience. I mean, are they all going to just be doing it on their phones? Are they at the gym? What do you see as happening as the workplace for the future?
I hope we don't make the gym into a workplace. But there are great deals that happen in the gym, so don't discount it. I think that the workplace of the future can go in many different directions at this point, really influenced by three key factors. The globalization of the workforce and the work being done, as well as the demand for flexibility. We're seeing more people who want to set their own schedule, or they want to work where they want to work or how they want to work. And then we also have the unfortunate influence of this constant connectiveness and this need for immediate gratification. It used to be if you had a question about something, you had to go do the research about it. These days, we all whip out our phones and ask our phones and say, hey, what is this? And it comes up with the top rated answer on the internet. And in that, we've ended up with a need for, if I send you an email, I want an answer. And depending on where you're from, depends on whether or not you really feel like you have to give that answer. Now, with the globalization, we have this where you may be sitting in here, Maryland, working with someone in China on a project that takes place in Africa. That's really not all that inconceivable these days. Well, those are three totally different time zones. And so we're seeing a lot of stress being placed on someone who may have a boss in a totally different region and has to decide what hours they work, have to decide, am I going to be constantly stuck to my phone and my email? Culturally, many cultures don't even think that way. They're not programmed that way. In the Middle East, just that's not a way of thinking. But if you're doing business with someone in Italy, you may have to get used to that. Is that a good thing? I don't think so. So between those factors of technology becoming more and more portable, I mean, it used to be, I remember the first laptop, so to speak, portable computers. My mother had one, and it took a luggage cart to move it around. That was the portability of it. She had to call me to lift it up because she couldn't lift it. Now we have tablets that can do everything our desktop can do and then some. We have Skype communication and other type of instant communication with visuals, with videos. I can work on your computer. You can work on my computer. Is it really great for us to be going to the coffee shop to be doing our work on these tiny tablets? Not really. So technology is giving us tools that are not necessarily good for our bodies, but our thirst for new, our thirst for new technology is really pushing it in that direction. So I can see the workforce becoming this very spread out. We don't necessarily even have to go to the office anymore. We're working wherever it is we want to work on tools that are not necessarily designed for the task. Or I can see us going in the complete opposite direction and saying, you know what, my health is more important to me than the latest gadget. I'm going to go where I have control over the environment, work on a tool that's specifically designed for that task, and get the job done, go home and play.
So that keep the distinctions going or have work all your life, all the time.
Yes.
So I guess the final question then to wrap that up is, what does that mean for ergonomics?
It means that we have become extremely flexible in our way of thinking and in our use of local, readily available things. I mean, if you're going to go to the coffee shop and want to work on your laptop, then I want you to take with you a bag that you can put on your lap so that your laptop comes up to you and you don't go down to it. The biggest thing within the world of computers is the idea of becoming a turtle while you're working. We have two turtles in the offices these days. The regular turtle, so if you think about it, you hunch forward and your head comes forward, you fall into this C curve. Or we have the teenage turtle, which is the stretch out in your chair, legs stick out, and you're reaching forward, hanging out on that computer. Those two postures are really not postures our body was developed for. And I don't see evolution taking us any further in this, suddenly being able to work that way. So something's got to give. And I think that as we move into more flexible workspaces, we're going to have to decide how we can actually make coffee shops into offices. Do we need to have spaces where people can grab things to put them on their lap so the tablet comes up to them? Do we need to have or ask places to provide comfortable chairs, not comfy chairs, not curl up in and have a grand old time in chairs, but actual chairs that hold us in proper posture? Is that really where we want to go? Ergonomics is going to have to figure that out. And quite frankly, the management's going to have to figure that out, because whether or not your employee is working from a coffee shop or working from your office, the important part is the product. The important part is what they are producing. Mm-hmm. And if they are not actually producing enough or up to par, however you want to call it, because they're in a discomfort level, because they're working in a coffee shop, can you really say to them, I don't want you to work in a coffee shop anymore. I want you to come into the office. Are we going to have to start putting those limitations on people? And that's a management and human resources question. Where is that limit going to come? And we've seen it pop up in different companies saying, we're going to turn the email system off after hours. You just are not permitted to work on work activities after hours. Now, the flip side of that is the stress levels go up because they can't work on emails and they come in the morning to have these long list of emails. So we have to balance the stress levels. We have to balance the physical requirements of the job. And I see it as going in so many different directions, and the ergonomics world really needs to catch up, and the technology world needs to recognize that necessarily the better, faster, more mobile thing is not necessarily the best.
Mm. Very interesting. I'm looking forward to your new book, which I hope will be sort of the ergonomics of the smartphone or something, which is an interesting idea.
Yes.
We want to thank you so much. I think it's really interesting material, and everybody in the Middle East is going to enjoy it. So I'm going to repeat that our guest is Dr. Naomi Abrams, who's the founder and, I believe, director, is that correct,
mm-hmm.
of Worksite Health and Safety Consultants. She's based here in Maryland. You can find her on the website. You can also track her through Google. And I'm sure she'll be coming to a company near you. So many thanks to you all for tuning in to ZPod at Amid East today. Our music was generously provided by JBot7, LLC. And you can find our programs at amideast.org. Please join us again as we bring you experts, discussion, and new ideas that impact the way that we work both today and tomorrow. Signing off.